Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Now, without a full-time kind of steady income, you know, wasn't able to borrow anyway. So I dabbled in, you know, shares a little bit, you know, some wins, some losses. But when I started as an intern doctor, I knew I wanted to get into property investing.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Sham, and in this episode, we speak with Daniel Lamp, a doctor and avid property investor from Sydney. While neither medicine nor property investing are embedded in his DNA, he shares what got him into both of these fields and how he works to strike the perfect work-life balance. Lamp works as a GP and is proud to help people from all walks of life when they need it most. However, he knows the importance of taking care of himself, including his financial health. In his free time, he's also combined his two passions to run meetup groups for doctors and healthcare professionals interested in property investing.
So very varied. So I currently split my time in between general practice and also working in emergency at the hospital. So I guess in the general practice clinic setting, I see patients manage their chronic conditions, do preventative care, you know, check results, things like that. Whilst in the emergency department, usually it's more kind of acute or emergency type presentations. You know, patients come in with a problem and my role is to come up with a diagnosis and then also a management plan. You know, they might come in with heart attacks, strokes, infections, you know, injuries that need stitching, mental health crisis. It's a real mix. Both my roles, I use my problem solving skills, which I quite enjoy. And it's great helping people, meeting people from all walks of life.
He's keen to buck stereotypes, starting with how he got into his profession.
Coming from immigrant family background, not particularly well off growing up. And I guess importance of education was distilled in me as well. But in regards to medicine, unlike the stereotype, my parents didn't actually push me into medicine or anything like that. You know, I wanted to choose a degree, a career where there was, you know, science and academic as well, but then can also interact with people and make a real difference in their lives. I applied for medical school and was accepted.
A Hong Kong native, Lamp came to Australia at 3 years old. While he and his family quickly found a place to call home, he found himself venturing north when it was time to spread his wings.
Initially in Western Sydney and then later kind of in the northern suburbs, kind of Hornsby area of Sydney. I went to high school in Baulkham Hills High, which was a selective school. So, a heavy emphasis, I guess, on academics. I wanted to choose a uni degree where I could, I enjoyed science, but then also wanted to, you know, have a real world application and impact on people. So, you know, applied widely for medicine and was accepted, I think, for Western Sydney and also Newcastle. I liked Newcastle's program and it was a good lifestyle living there as well. And enjoyed my time studying there.
So I'm just curious now, do you know why your parents moved from Hong Kong to Australia when you were very young?
So I think that was around the time of 1997 or so, handover of Hong Kong back to China. And I think that was part of the reason. And also, I guess, wanting you know, a better life, like lots of immigrants in Australia, offering, yeah, opportunities, which I guess I'm grateful for.
He grabbed all the opportunities he could with both hands, though like many young people, he temporarily lost sight of his goals. Luckily, a reminder came along at just the right time.
It was a bit of a trek to get to, I remember that. But in terms of the environment, going to class, teachers, quite enjoyed it. One thing does stick out in mind is when I was in year 10, I remember being called to the deputy principal's office. And I was like, oh, you know, what have I done wrong? You know, my mind churning. And then I found out that I was in the bottom 10% of the cohort. And kind of it was kind of like a wake up call to try and, you know, pull things together. And I did soon after that have the goal of wanting to study medicine. So I knew I had to try and, you know, so I implemented a plan, you know, consistent action, you know, lunchtimes, using that to study it as well. And ended up at the end of year 12, going from bottom 10 out of 200 to the top 10 out of 200. So that was a real achievement, and I was quite proud of that.
While the moment in the principal's office gave him a nudge in the right direction, it wasn't what drove him to study medicine.
I wouldn't say there was one particular incident or reason. As I alluded to before, you know, I quite enjoyed the science, all the sciences really. But then I wanted something where, yeah, I guess a bit of real world application and kind of employable skills. You know, rather than, I knew some people that had gone down, say, medical science route and then hard to get employment after that as well. So there was that practical side of it. But also as well, I guess, from my interactions with doctors growing up, you know, overall had quite positive influences. And I guess that opened up my mind. And I guess, you know, being a selective school as well, you know, there were some colleagues that were interested in medicine as well. You know, other things I thought briefly about was like law and stuff like that, but I'm glad I chose medicine over, say, law. Yeah.
And I'm really curious then, after you finished high school, did you go straight into studying into medicine at Newcastle University, or did you take some time off to potentially travel and see the world, or did you do any work or jobs or anything like that?
Yeah, so I guess medicine, you can go either undergraduate route or the graduate route. The trend, I think, from what I hear nowadays, is more unis are leaning towards the, you know, doing an undergrad degree, then going to postgrad. But at the time, you know, I went into Newcastle, which was undergraduate 5-year degree. And yeah, it was a good time, you know, learning the theory in lectures. But then also one of the highlights was the early clinical placements, where you had, you know, could actually meet patients and see what you were learning being applied to them. And also, obviously, like, you know, other uni degrees, there's a lot of, you know, self-directed learning as well. And yeah, it was good. But towards the end of the 5-year degree, I, you know, couldn't wait to start, you know, working.
He wasn't exempt from working hard while studying, and also capitalized on his skills early on.
I did save up my money, and towards the end, I knew I wanted to get into property investing, so I knew I needed to start saving for a deposit. So yeah, did a lot of casual jobs, retail, and also had a tutoring business as well, helping people mainly with maths and also to a medicine entry as well.
While his jobs came in handy when it came to saving, they alone weren't enough to jump into property. Always a problem solver, Lamp had a solution. Or so he thought.
You know, without a full-time kind of steady income, you know, wasn't able to borrow anyway. So I dabbled in, you know, shares a little bit, you know, some wins, some losses. When I started as an intern doctor, I knew I wanted to get into property investing. Basically, I did shares initially, and, you know, I remember one share tripling, but then I had another, you know, I think it was a mining share that dropped 90%. So it kind of balanced each other out, I think, by the end of it. And, scrolling through the share prices every day, don't think was particularly great use of time. And I guess I did think ahead, wanted to improve my circumstances financially, and I could see, just saving by itself is important, but, needed to take the next step and, invest in some assets as well. And, I could see lots of Australians, believe in and love property as an asset vehicle. So I did a lot of research. And then later when I was an intern doctor, attending some meetups, looking at forums such as Property Chat and, listening to podcasts such as this one, and just getting all the information I can and then later applying it.
Was there any particular book or anything that you stumbled across that kind of give you insight, or was it just mainly the forums and listening to podcasts and talking to people at meetups?
Yeah, I don't think there was one particular book. I do remember reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, which I think a lot of people do, and that got me just mindset wise interested in in investing, and also partly business as well, rather than just being an employee. But obviously that book doesn't directly apply to help you with buying property in Australia. So yeah, use a wide range of resources.
His parents were in professional roles, but not within property. Although property didn't run through his veins, the Lamb family has always worked hard.
My parents, have their own home, but weren't, I guess, taught or particularly did property investing. So my dad, once he eventually did have to retrain, I think he was initially in IT at the time. And my mum was an accountant, and in Sydney is a bookkeeper.
His role has led to many opportunities to travel and work across Australia, both in cities and rural areas. He found venturing into the regions proved somewhat of a culture shock.
So everyone after medical school has to do junior years, internship, and then a resident before, potentially going into specialty training. But given there's so many junior doctors nowadays, usually people do a couple more years of, junior unaccredited training before getting onto a training program. So I was an intern in Sydney. I worked in a variety of different, roles and locations. You do different terms, rotating every, 10 to 12 weeks or so. So I worked in, very busy tertiary hospitals in Sydney, all the way to some rural locations, such as outback, Broken Hill in New South Wales, Griffith in the Murrumbidgee region, and also in Mount Isa, in northern Queensland. So, in the more rural locations, as there are less doctors, there was an opportunity to kind of step up and upskill. And at these smaller hospitals, you do see some really sick patients, but you have less resources available. So I do remember, being part of the team trying to resuscitate some really unwell patients and then trying to coordinate with the Royal Flying Doctor Service to kind of retrieve them out to more major centres for more specialised care.
During these stressful times, Lamp certainly felt challenged and ultimately took away many important life lessons.
It was obviously challenging, but I guess, the training kicks in, do the basics, go through a system of what you can do, what may be wrong with the patient, examination, investigations, and then trying to figure out a management plan, involving specialists or retrieval and things like that. So yeah, it was a good learning experience. With the staff, I could see, being a smaller team, that everyone's knows everyone by the first name and can kind of work together as well.
Excellent. So you've completed, let's say you've gone through, how many years was that to do your internship?
I did 3 years, I guess, in the hospital system, and then I applied and was accepted into general practice training, and that was another 2 years.
Wow. So let's say all up, 10 years of your life has been pretty much up to training until you actually become a qualified GP. Is that correct to say?
I've had some friends and colleagues who, trying to get into other specialty training programs such as surgery or, those ones instead of being general practice 2 years, those could be, 5, 6+ years further. So, yeah.
As with many people dedicated to their profession, Lamp has a specific reason he chose the path he did of becoming a GP.
I could see in the hospital there's a lot of really unwell patients, but some of the conditions, could have been prevented by, could be diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, things like that. If seeing them towards the pointy end in emergency and intensive care where, you can try your best, but imagine if we could prevent that in the first place. So that kind of drew me towards general practice. I'll be honest. I think, with some of the highlight in the media as well, there's a lot of challenges in general practice and preventative healthcare and the system as well, and politics, which I probably won't get into in this podcast. But I guess that's what drew me to that as well. And also, partly as well in terms of, I don't have to do night shifts, in general practice and things like that. But, from working in healthcare, I can see that, it's really, not just the doctors working hard, but also the nurses and the cleaners, and especially in some of those smaller regions I worked in, I could see everyone kind of pulling in together to try and keep the health system going and, providing the best possible care in challenging circumstances, yeah.
Well, it's been really interesting. And then since then, you've been a GP all the way through?
Yeah. So recently got my fellowship, but I'm still, working in the hospital, in the emergency sometimes. I enjoy that mix and also keeping up my skills as well.
After receiving mixed results during his experience with shares, Lamp turned his eye to property towards the end of his university degree.
I could see property allowed, leverage, can get steady cash flow from rental income and obviously, of course, capital growth. And also, I guess I found out that certain professionals can get into property with, 10% deposit and not have to pay lender's mortgage insurance, such as doctors, nurses, accountants. So I could see some of the advantages with property. And I guess my mindset was that I need to be investing even from early in the career, because at the time I could see these doctors, more advanced in the career around me, so busy looking after patients, doing overtime, doing night shifts, on call, working 60 up to 100 hours a week. They had no time really to take care of their own physical health or also their financial health. So I could see, just working and working for so many hours for decades on end, was not going to be sustainable. After... In my first year as a junior doctor, I was 23 years old. I had saved up a deposit and had done the research. I didn't get any handouts from my parents. My salary as a first year doctor was, $60,000, and I had around, I think, $90,000 in savings. So I guess, with 10% deposit, stamp duty, buyer agent fees, solicitor fees, all in, I had to chip in, $80,000. Which I remember at the time was so daunting. I had watched, my savings build up over time in the bank account. And then I remember feeling like sick in the stomach, pretty much having to put all my life savings into this one investment property. Yeah.
After growing up in Sydney, the Harbour City was Lamp's first choice when it came to locations to invest in. However, the timing just wasn't right.
But I could see that Sydney had just peaked, and for my budget, I could see better value in another state. I could see that Brisbane was undervalued at the time and had good fundamentals. I did use a buyer's agent for the first one because I guess I wanted someone to hold my hand for such a big investment decision, especially kind of first investment. I wanted to make the right choice. So I bought in a suburb in the North Brisbane, reasonably close to the city, had good amenities. At the time, there was a piece of land in an infill suburb, and then separately engaged a builder with a fixed price contract built a standard four bedroom, two bath, double lock up garage, all in for about $560,000. I did want to point that this is different to those house and land packages where like a marketer or spruiker sells you the whole package in a very far flung suburb and they get a like a 20% markup. In general, I'm not a fan of house and land packages. But back to this one, I guess in hindsight, the downside was that the land was not yet titled. Initially I was told, only be, 2-3 months, but it ended up taking almost a year for it to finally get registered, which was really frustrating at the time. I guess one silver lining was that the market was still going up and I only had to pay interest on the land portion initially. Only had to pay stamp duty on the land and not like a house and land package where you pay the stamp duty on the full value. There were hiccups along the way, which, when friends and colleagues ask me about property investing, I tell them to expect hiccups. It's not going to be just smooth sailing. So I guess in this case, the initial building plans submitted to council were declined, as apparently it needed a specific distance between the back fence and the back of the house. So then, back to the drawing board, further delays, paying more interest. But in the end, construction got started. I got regular updates with pictures and it was very exciting, once we got to the completion stage.
Excellent. And how long did that take to complete the whole build from purchase to the end?
I would say around a year, all up. And when it came out time to kind of trying to rent the property out, at the time it wasn't a hot rental market. One prospective tenant kind of wanted an extra aircon installed in the master bedroom and I guess negotiated and they were happy to pay $20 extra week in rent if I put the aircon in. So I did. And I guess this is a lesson in terms of trying to come up with win-win solutions for everyone. Yeah.
He bought the property as a fixed price building contract and used a mortgage broker to organize the construction finance. When all was said and done, it was 2018 and time to start the process again.
So I just sat on it while I continued my medical career. And then later, I did buy my second investment property. So I do have an interesting story for this one. So I had finished a set of 7 night shifts in working in intensive care at the time. And then, I hopped on a plane to Brisbane. And then in this weekend, I just inspected, 10 to 15 properties kind of back to back. Had a rental car just going around. There was one property that fit the criteria that I was after. This one I felt a bit more confident to do on my own as well and do my research. So there was one property that fit the criteria and then I put in an offer and it was accepted, which was very exciting. This was just before the 2019 federal election where there was lots of market uncertainty, people, holding off decisions, waiting for this event, but I pulled the trigger anyway. So soon after election, the Brisbane market started taking off, and then I bought that one for $625,000, and today it'd be between $1 to $1.1 million.
Between this and his first property, now valued at $900,000, he's made some excellent returns in a short period of time, and is ready to keep rolling.
Yeah, so got the 2 investment properties, and looking back, with the second property which I purchased myself, and actually did better than the buyer's agent with the first one. But overall, still happy with the market, I guess, and also, as I said, I avoided some of my colleagues. Unfortunately, bought like the really wrong asset class and gone backwards, and I guess I'm thankful that I've done okay so far, and keep learning and keep pressing forward. Yeah.
Lamp's second property was easier for him to acquire than the first, a phenomenon many investors are familiar with. The first property is typically the most challenging to get in the first place, with the second simply falling into place. For Lamp, however, it wasn't quite as straightforward.
In that 2019 lending was very, very tight. And I think at the time, I can't remember exact reasons, but talking to my broker, I and then with a good savings rate, I actually ended up tipping in cash for the second property. But yeah, moving forward, you know, I guess got some healthy equity now, and I'll have a chat with my broker to explore, moving forward. I guess going back to that property lessons, I guess one lesson I learned was that it's very important to do the research and the due diligence, but then equally, it's also important to take action. And I guess another one was that, land value is important. You know, the second property I bought was on a bigger and nicer piece of land. Yeah.
He credits his stellar saving skills partly to the way he grew up and partly to who he is today.
Growing up in a not particularly well-off household, I guess savings habits were instilled in me. Once I did start working as a junior doctor, I guess to be honest, there wasn't much time to take holidays anyway, and you can't really choose when to take annual leave. It's kind of dictated to you by hospital management. But I did go on some small, road trips, and I think in 2018 did go to New Zealand as well. And then, hopefully soon can, with COVID settling, maybe do some more trips as well. Yeah.
When it comes to his worst investing moments, he's faced a challenge or two that many other healthcare professionals know well.
Without going to specifics, I have had a few close calls in regards to almost buying the wrong type of property. You know, some so-called advisors recommend some, off-the-plan properties, which, turned out to be really poor performing assets later. Later I found out that they stood to gain, anywhere up to $50,000 commission, which they don't disclose to you. So I felt really quite low and, quite taken advantage of, as doctors and busy healthcare professionals, can be seen as easy targets, I think. Sometimes talking to my friends or colleagues, they're just told to outsource your decision making regarding investments, only realizing afterwards that, these spruikers, they could even be your financial planner or accountant or mortgage broker, that, they didn't have your best interests at heart, I've seen some colleagues, unfortunately, buy the wrong property and be burnt, ending up with negative equity. So basically the property going backwards.
In our market, it can be difficult to know who to trust, and delegating decisions isn't always the best way forward. However, outsourcing has its time and place.
Yeah, so I think it's still good to kind of outsource certain things. Like, I'm not going to manage my own properties, but I think, as you said, you can't outsource the overall decision making or the strategy, that you have to do yourself. And then in terms of opportunity costs, I guess my personal worst investing moment would be the missed opportunity costs. Properties not a very liquid asset where you can get in and out due to the high transaction costs. So buying that wrong property can be very costly. So I guess, my first property still has gone up, but, looking back, could have done better if, bought a larger block of land,
So can I just explore that a little bit further? Looking in hindsight, that property seems to have done really well, on the back of it. What were some of the things besides the block of land that you could have done differently, do you think?
It wasn't particularly disastrous, my first property, but at the time, I guess I could have bought an existing house on an older house, I guess, on a larger block of land for the same budget, which would have probably got slightly less rent. So I guess it depends on your personal strategy. But for me, if I went back in time, I probably would have bought an existing older house on a larger block of land,
Strategy-wise, since we're sort of touching on this topic, what is your strategy at this point in time?
Early on in my career and investing career, my goal at the moment is to build up an asset base. That's why going for high capital growth properties to be able to leverage that equity into purchasing more is the goal. And I guess still reasonable cash flow, you know, especially with, you know, interest rates going up. But I think, you know, it's rather than just listening to the negative media headlines, you know, to try and step back to actually crunch the numbers, like what does it mean? Can I still service the loans? And, you know, what is the overall fundamentals about the particular property market you're buying in? And also not just the whole economy, I think it's also your personal economy, you know, like is it the right time for you? You know, it might be before children or before huge expenses or your own home, but then you still want to be in the still increasing your personal investments and financial freedom goals. And I guess the bigger picture for me, I guess I don't have a particular number in mind, but I guess once I have an asset base and then maybe potentially later look into more cash flow assets, whether it be shares or index funds or commercial property maybe, or even some alternative property investments. But at the moment, I guess, is to try and build up that asset base and to keep learning as well.
Liam wants to be able to choose to work as he's passionate about what he does. While he wants to continue that, his goal is to have the choice of freedom and to help others realize they can do the same.
That is kind of the reason why I've started a podcast, Passive Income Doctor, is to try and increase the financial literacy of doctors and healthcare professionals, because we're not taught this in medical school, university. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I see so many doctors, yeah, earning good incomes, but then working, you know, 80-100 hour weeks, barely seeing their families, a lot of the time a little bit frustrated from their work. You know, I can see that they're still passionate about the work, but I think if you just work out so much, you might be at risk of burnout, which is not good for yourself, and then also not good for your families, and also not good for your patients as well. So I think if a doctor is able to have that financial freedom and not have to worry about that side of things, and they might be able to leave a particularly bad or stressful job or role, maybe even go part-time or take that leap of faith and maybe go into another area or role or hospital environment where it's a bit better for lifestyle. So I think it'll be better overall for everyone.
His learning lessons have also been positive, even if they were accompanied by anxiety and skepticism.
So I guess my personal aha moment would be that second investment property, where I did my own research and due diligence and took the action, you know, flying up after a set of 7-night shifts and going around doing the hard work, you know, lots of uncertainty, you know, everyone saying, oh, is it the right time to buy? Which, you know, these if you've been in the market long enough, you know, it comes in cycles. You know, the sentiment comes, sentiment goes. So at the time, even though market sentiment was very low and lots of uncertainty, you know, I still took the action, pulled the trigger. And I guess, you know, that's paid off, you know, going up, you know, 400K or so in, you know, about 3 years. So, yeah.
Although he bought his second property without the help of a buyer's agent, he's not writing them off for himself or others.
So I guess in my case, you know, I did better by myself than with the buyer's agent. But I think I'm still open to the idea. And I think if you have the time and passion and effort to do it yourself and, you know, use all the resources, definitely I think you can do it yourself. But for some people who may be very time poor or not have the fortitude or the effort to do it themselves, then having a good buyer's agent, I think, would be worth it as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm just curious, when you went up to Brisbane and you did all that looking around in the day, did you ever have a thought in your mind going, once if I don't find a deal that day, what would you do next?
I guess at the time, there was lots of property, and also I did research before going up as well. So I could already kind of have a gauge on the market I was looking at, you know, what good value was, you know, rental yields, and talking to some agents as well. So I already had put in the legwork. So, it wasn't just that kind of 1 or 2 days as well. But I guess in hindsight, if I didn't see a deal that stacked up, probably would have revisited at another time.
And are you planning to still continue to invest into the Queensland market for your next few properties, or are you looking at considering other markets as well?
I think moving forward, I'm interested in the Perth market and also I think even Sydney. I think a bit contrarian, but I think Sydney's starting to look a little bit interesting as well. So I think, you know, two investment properties, reasonable value in Brisbane, I'm happy with at the moment, and I'll explore some other markets.
Lamp uses many forms of mentorship, ranging from rich dad, poor dad paperbacks through to more technological sources.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say there's one particular mentor, but definitely using the online forums and also meeting people, other fellow investors at some property meetups as well, and also putting together a team, a good mortgage broker, accountant, and talking to many of them has helped me become a better investor. And in terms of challenges in regards to investing property, I guess like lots of other investors in recent times, one big challenge is the tightening of lending and finance. I guess I love talking to other property investors and learning from, you know, anyone and everyone.
Finding trusted advisors is never easy, as Lamp found out firsthand.
Personally, I found it very, very difficult and overwhelming. You know, lots of people will say they're good, and then it's only in hindsight whether you know they're good or not. And also at the time, at being, you know, 23 years old, I didn't have that many people in my peer group that were active property investors, which made it a bit more challenging. So some of them I did have to kind of take a leap of faith after doing my due diligence. But nowadays, I guess I do hang around with some other property investors, both doctors and non-doctors, who, you know, if they give me a good recommendation, you know, that holds much more weight. That's I guess partly also why I've started a podcast and also doing some regular meetups as well for doctors, so that we can get together and try and share our experiences with the people we've used.
I guess I'm curious, what do you think has been the best advice that you've received?
So I guess best piece of advice, one that comes to mind is, you know, spend less than you earn. You know, lots of doctors that I've come across are earning heaps and heaps of money, but they also have very big expenses too. You know, the idea of lifestyle creep, you know, they're, you know, upgrading to the, you know, the nice or the newest car every year, multiple overseas holidays, private school fees for multiple kids, you know, buying that expensive trophy home, you know, $30,000 a month mortgage repayments. I think that was even pre the most latest interest rate increases. So if you have so much expenses, you know, you might not have that much left over to invest. You know, and there's a perception in the public that, you know, doctors are very wealthy, and also there's some societal pressure, I guess, to appear wealthy, not just for doctors, but, you know, certain professions as well. I guess in context is, you know, if you're doing medical school after an undergraduate degree, you know, often you might be starting with $100,000 in debt, and then, you know, first year salary, base salary is, you know, about $60,000. So I guess spend less than you earn is one piece of advice that I think is very useful and often talked about, but definitely useful. I guess what I would add to that is that, you know, not just the savings, but then with the savings you have, you need to invest it. You know, otherwise inflation will just eat away the cash in the bank. You know, a lot of my colleagues and some more junior colleagues, you know, want to wait until they finish specialty training before they invest. But, you know, that could take, you know, 5 to 10 years, and, you know, property can go up enormously during that time. And then secondly, another great piece of advice is, you know, just take action. You know, definitely you need to research and do your due diligence, but you need to take action.
But if you met yourself, say, 10 years ago, what do you think you would have said to him?
I would have said, start investing earlier and know the power of compound growth. I guess looking back, you know, obviously this pretty challenging, you know, being a uni student to try and purchase property. But I guess, you know, perhaps I would have looked at, you know, if I was able to have a part-time job or potentially joint venturing or something like that. So I guess start investing earlier. And I guess second one thing is, you know, take care of your financial health. You know, nobody cares about your finances as much as you do. You know, of course, you should draw on the expertise of others who have done, you know, what you want to achieve, and also, you know, have trusted advisors and build a team around you. But definitely yourself, you need to take an interest in your finances.
Looking forward to the future, what do you think, what are you most excited about, say, your property journey in the next, say, 5 years?
Investing-wise, I'm excited to grow my portfolio. I currently see good value in Perth, and I think Sydney did go through a big boom and then a bit of a recent correction, but I think Sydney is starting to look interesting also. And other than investing, you know, I'm hoping to spread the word about how doctors can avoid bad property mistakes and to, you know, take an interest and take care of their finances. You know, the difference from getting the first property wrong to having a great asset selection is huge. You know, if you can have your first property perform, you can, yeah, compound into your second and third and so on. So, yeah, I'm excited to organize more meetups and to grow my podcast as well.
So, Daniel, I think you've achieved such a great amount of things and success in your journey at this point in time. How much of it do you think has been due to your skill, intelligence, and hard work? And how much of it do you think has been due to luck?
Throughout my life, I've always been working hard, you know, to grow my skills, you know, not afraid to work these 60 to 80 hour weeks, but then also, you know, other things that I've done is, you know, educating myself and investing when others were telling me, you know, oh, you know, it's not the right time. I would say that the harder you work and the more action you take, yeah, the more luck you attract.
Thank you to Daniel Lamp, our guest on this episode of Property Investory.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.